Welcome to The Bigger Podcast, the show that goes behind the scenes of greenkeeping and golf course management. Each episode will bring you insight and inspiration from the people shaping the future of greenkeeping, from apprentices to course managers and from industry leaders to innovators. Whether you work in greenkeeping, the wider golf industry, or you just love the game, this podcast will give you a deeper understanding of greenkeepers and greenkeeping. We are Bigger, the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association, and we'll bring you everything you need to know about the people who make golf and great golf courses possible. We're joined today by our Chief Executive, Jim Croxton. This year, Jim has marked 15 years in the job and is steeped in the game of golf. He grew up on a golf course, has a lifelong passion for the game and the golf industry, and regularly speaks to leaders of all governing bodies and works to promote greater respect for greenkeepers and to improve their working conditions. Welcome to The Bigger Podcast, Chief Executive Jim Croxton.
Well, thank you, Steve. Yeah, nice to be on.
2026 has been quite the year, I think, for Bigger, and there's a host of new initiatives that we're going to discuss. But it's also been quite a challenging year, I think, for your members as well. We've got this summer that looks like it's going to be the hottest on record. Many parts of the UK, particularly in the south of England, have been in drought. How difficult has this summer been for greenkeepers, and what have your members been telling you about it?
Yeah, you're right. 26 is a really big year in lots of ways. I always say that I'm kind of have two jobs. I've got to run the business of Bigger and run the association, and pretty much everything on that line is just going brilliantly. Our membership numbers are in great shape. Our education uptake is brilliant. We've got loads of new initiatives coming up, and sort of business, if you like, is great. But at the same time, we're a members association. We're a people association. And what's closest to our heart is the members, the greenkeepers out there. And it's been, you know, yet again, I mean, every time you and I talk on this kind of environment, Steve, it's been a difficult year, whether it's been the wettest winter on record or the hottest spring on record or the driest summer. I think in general, greenkeepers prefer to have, if they have the choice between too much water or too little, they take too little, but it's got to extremes this year. I've been and visited a lot of golf courses, a lot of people really on their last legs, the last few drops of water in their reservoirs, or they're maxing out their abstraction amounts for the year. I actually really like dry summers, probably because I hit the ball so short. It makes me a better golfer. I love watching a kind of yellow brown open. Birkdale was brilliant, and Lytham was brilliant. Just seeing, you know, golf the links way, absolutely correct. But of course, it just stresses our members out. That balance between trying to keep a grass plant alive around putting surfaces in particular, understanding kind of how you're going to manage and husband your water. And for those that have got a restricted source, you know, there are clubs out there that I know that are really, really suffering. People that have perhaps got new turf this year that is just not surviving. I'm pleased to say so far it's not been a year full of sort of heartache and tragedy with people losing their jobs and having major kind of mental challenges. But I know it's been a very tough year for greenkeepers.
Yeah, and it just feels, I mean, we keep talking about extremes, but when do extremes become normal? I think we've talked about this in the past. I think this is now the third drought in the last 5 years. 2018 obviously was, I mean, people like equate that summer now with the summer of 76, and then this one appears like it's going to be even hotter and even greater and even drier. How can Bigger support its members? What is Bigger doing to support its members with these extremes of weather? And just trying, I suppose, to educate golf clubs and golf club members about what's happening on their golf clubs and on their golf courses, sorry, and that this isn't possibly a one-off, that we're going to see more and more of this kind of extremes down the road.
Yeah. It's a really good question, because in actual fact, we just keep needing to do a lot more of the same. You know, our role has always been to try and, first of all, get our members together and support them and help them and listen to them. And we continue to do that, but we do so with numbers, you know, at record levels in modern times. And then we try to elevate how they are perceived and known and respected within their facilities. But as the game of golf has continued to grow over these last few years, you know, in terms of participation, revenue, cost, you know, the game of golf is costing more and more each year, or certainly at green fee level, if not at subscription level, the focus on course conditioning, I think, gets more and more each year. I genuinely believe that the appreciation of greenkeepers is improving year on year. We've got Thank a Greenkeeper Day coming up in the very, very near future, and just our numbers on that, but not just the numbers because of the work we've done, but the genuine appreciation we see, people coming on absolutely off their own bat and just sort of say how great their greenkeepers are. There are still problems out there, don't get me wrong. There are still clubs where the greenkeepers aren't respected well enough, and we work individually in those cases as best we can alongside our friends in all the governing bodies. But our job is just to try and make sure that greenkeepers have the knowledge and the skills and the experience to handle these situations. So much of this, I was with a bunch of greenkeepers yesterday and chatting through, and they're all saying the same thing. This year, communication has been key. And so much of the education we do, particularly at BTME, you're a veteran of, Steve, so much of it is around communicating and having conversations and managing sideways and upwards and all of these things. In fact, so little of it nowadays is about agronomy, because they kind of know that stuff. And there's thousands of experts out there, but actually the skill in the greenkeeper is in engaging with golfers. I was involved in a bunch of discussions these last couple of days about autonomous mowing. I had a rather surreal experience of sitting on a panel next to Sir Nick Faldo, kind of my childhood hero, and we were chatting about robot mowers. I mean, that wasn't on my bingo card a few weeks ago, you know, to be doing that, but he and I seemed to agree, which was a bit frightening. But nonetheless, the big thing that came from that is, you know, there's a revolution happening in greenkeeping involving technology. But that has to be communicated, and our members have to become really skilled at communicating that to their managers, to their owners, and to their golfers.
So just finishing off on drought and obviously the summer that we've had, I mean, you and I have talked extensively for quite a number of years now about this problem and what was coming. I mean, you in particular have talked about the issues for golf clubs that use mains water, for example, and how they are really going to struggle if they don't find alternative water sources. And we're now seeing that, you know, half a dozen years after we first talked about that, we're now seeing that come to roost really and really become very prevalent. I mean, what do you think is coming down the road with these sort of extreme weathers, and how can golf clubs and how can your members sort of steal the playing public for what is to come?
It's a really broad answer to this, because there's so many levels to it. So first of all, you're absolutely right about mains water or potable water. The government has now issued a real genuine target to the water companies that demands they reduce the amount of potable water that is distributed. And there is a fairly hefty reduction required on non-domestic water, i.e., yeah, any business water. It's not just golf, by the way. I mean, if you look at things like the new data centers, they're using an enormous amount of water. So we have got, as golf, to look at where our water is coming from and find resilient solutions. And essentially, the only real solution is harvesting and storing your own water. Because as a piece of land, you're entitled. I'll get some of this wrong in terms of the complex legislation. But basically, if you can store your own water, you can use that. And some of the people we're talking to say that the golf industry's ambition ought to be that every golf club is able to store enough water for a season on site. Now, that's not going to be possible for every golf club. Does that mean that every golf club is viable in 20, 30 years' time? Probably not. Probably means that some places really just won't manage. But I think you'll see more and more reservoir development and other ways of storing taking place. We've got to educate the public so that the public don't see any greenness on a golf course in a drought year like this as being somehow they're taking water out of our mouths, which is why we have to educate that golf courses are good users of water. We have to do, the RNA are very soon to publish, I believe, the next kind of set of studies into the value of golf to the UK, you know, economically and health-wise. There are huge numbers. The number of people that for whom golf is a key part of their lives, the numbers around how much longer golfers live than non-golfers, which is an extraordinary statistic. The amount of value, the amount of jobs that it brings. Golf is an important, it's not the most important thing in the country, don't get me wrong, but it has a role to play. And without some water, we can't run that sport effectively when we have dry and hot periods like we've just had. And you made a really valid point earlier. Extreme is now normal. The phrase I always use is I just think we get bigger weather than we used to. When it's hot, it's really hot. When it's cold, it's really cold. When it's wet for ages. And when we have a dry spell, it lasts for 3 and 4 and 5 months now, not for 2 weeks. So, you know, we could easily be sitting here next year talking about how busy 2027 is, and we're all flooded and we've all got, you know, rotten feet because it's been, you know, knee deep in water. We don't know. But the weird thing is that the general trends are, the amount of rainfall is largely the same during the year. It just comes completely differently.
I think, obviously, we've got a lot of other things to talk about, so I we'll bring this part of the podcast to a close. But I do think there's a real responsibility, I think, to sort of inform the public and communicate to the public what's happening and what's going to happen in the future. So we've gone through this, I suppose the point I'm getting to is we've gone through this period of drought, for example. We're starting to get some rain now. There's still this idea of it's raining now, everything's going to be fine. And yet, as your members will well know, you know, the consequences of what we've seen in the last few months are going to linger, in some cases, perhaps for years, while we get these extremes of weather just one after another. So I mean, how can the golf industry and how can your members help to kind of educate golfers and inform golfers of the conditions they're seeing on the ground and how those things evolve?
Well, it's doing this, isn't it? You know, it's having these conversations, you know, putting it out over the airways one way or another. Utilising all of our friends in the media, for example, you and your good colleagues at National Club Golfer and everything else, and trying to provide people with facts. So in the very near future, there's going to be another big survey of golf courses and their use of water so that we can actually present government and the Environment Agency. This survey is actually semi-commissioned by the Environment Agency, so they want to know because they understand that there are ways in which the golf industry, for example, can become a help to the Environment Agency. You know, the use of floodwater, the use of grey water, these kind of things are things that the golf could get involved with that can be of benefit. But there's that kind of quid pro quo, which is can we have access to enough in the hot and dry spells? It's just communication, and the beauty, I think, is the fact that with Biggar's kind of brand and reputation and membership growing, Our voice is getting louder and louder. You know, as I said, I was literally sat on a stage with Sir Nick Faldo talking about the rise of technology in golf to a pretty interested audience of golfers who are keen to know about these things. So we've just got to keep going on about it, keep shouting about it. I think that the one area that I think there is a real opportunity for us to win is in just how valuable golf courses are becoming as an environmental habitat as well as a place for golf. Because with the pressure on land, you know, we're hearing that we're going to see a load more houses built, we're going to see a lot more infrastructure built, less and less green space is going to be there, and particularly less and less managed green space. And for many kind of areas of biodiversity, the landscape needs to be managed. Nature reserves are the very best place for wildlife, absolutely. But after that, golf courses come pretty high up the ranks because they're a varied habitat and they're a managed habitat, which means that we don't get out of balance. I mean, that probably... it gives me a chance to mention the fact that we've launched the Golf Environment Awards. There's so many golf clubs doing extraordinary work in environmental sustainability. We're really excited to take this back from our colleagues at the SGRI. Biggar actually started these awards 40 years ago, and then they kind of got a bit big for us a number of years ago, and the SGRI took them on and ran them extremely well and built them up, and then it's kind of no longer the SGRI's core kind of business to be in this space, and we had a conversation, took them on, we've launched them, we've had some really cool nominations already, but really looking forward to next March when we'll crown a whole new set of winners of the Golf Environment Awards, this time with Biggar, because again, we've got to tell people, you know, that golf is a beneficial use of land, not just for nature, but also for the people that get the opportunity to use it.
Yeah, nominations for the Golf Environment Awards are open now. They will remain open until October. You can nominate through the Golf Environment Award website using a written application form with supporting images and videos. And there's a number of awards that that you can go for, including Conservation Champion Award, which will recognise an individual whose contribution has played a significant role in the success of a club's environmental and ecological management. There's the Positive Impact Award. There's Operation Pollinator Award, which I'm sure many of your members will be very familiar with. International Environment Golf Club of the Year and UK Environmental Golf Club of the Year as well. So there's a range of awards for members to take a look at, and there's plenty of categories in which I'm sure they can find a niche and find some place to hopefully get a nomination, hopefully get to the awards night.
Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled that you listed all those categories, because if you'd asked me to, I would definitely have forgotten one or two of them or got them wrong. So well done on doing the I's and T's there. Steve, thank you.
It's the joys of being able to look at a press release on a computer screen, Jim, while we're recording. As we record, tomorrow, September the 8th, will be Thank a Greenkeeper Day. It's an incredible celebration now. It's seen by millions of people all over the world. We've had, I mean, just looking at some of the tweet coverage that I've seen, we've had Justin Rose, you know, Michael McIntyre, huge celebrities who are showing their support for greenkeepers. I mean, this has been a tremendous success, I think, and continues to be so. What difference for you do these messages, you know, whether it's from celebrities or whether it's from ordinary golf club members, because we see loads of them on the day today, the day as well. What difference do those messages make to greenkeepers?
It's been a really interesting few years on Thank a Greenkeeper. And this began as Thank a Superintendent in America. The GCSAA began this and involved the rest of the major associations about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's been a little controversial. We've had some pretty challenging conversations internally with you know, greenkeepers saying, I don't want thanks. You know, I don't want to be thanked. I don't want to be pat on the back. I want to be respected, appreciated. I want to be better paid. I want better resources, whatever it may be. My view throughout, and I've been really firm on this, is that without visibility, we're not going to get respect or appreciation or whatever else. We've got to start with actually raising the profile of the work that our members do and making golfers, and it's brilliant when those are celebrity golfers, making them realize that this doesn't just happen by magic, that, you know, thousands of people, probably 15,000 people in the UK, work tirelessly to produce golf courses with passion and with expertise day in, day out, so that the 5+ million golfers in the UK can enjoy our sport. But you know, I've said this so many times, good greenkeeping is like good football refereeing. If you don't notice it, that's when it's at its best. We've got to make sure it's noticed. And so therefore, things like Thank a Greenkeeper Day, just asking people just to think, you know, everybody now, no matter what age, is on social media once a day. You know, and if they see something relating to the greenkeepers at the club down the road or at their own club saying, we just want to say thanks to the guys and girls that work so hard to make sure we enjoy our sport, it's a step forward in everyone thinking, oh yeah, you know, this doesn't happen by magic. This is something that's done by people with passion who care. And it's an example of why the game of golf costs money. You know, it doesn't just happen, you know, for nothing. And so I think Thank a Greenkeeper, Thank a Superintendent, I think other initiatives that we do are really important just in bringing a profile up. The first year or two of this project, it was us thanking ourselves. It was greenkeepers thanking their colleagues. It was bigger saying lovely things and kind of arm twisting our friends in the media to say nice things. The really lovely thing over the last 2, maybe even 3 years, and big kudos to my colleague Zoe Wright, who's worked incredibly hard on this, is actually people just seeing it and going, I want to be part of this myself. Because it means much more when a golfer or a club owner or a professional or a celebrity just says, you know, thanks guys, thanks girls. This is a really, we love the game, but we love the game even more when the golf course plays nicely, the ball rolls true. I hope we continue with it. Interesting to see that the PGA this year kind of globally suddenly launched out of nowhere, Thank a PGA Professional Day. I don't know yet how successful otherwise that's been. But I had a little smile on my face when I saw, you know, the professional side of the game deciding they want to jump on this same sort of bandwagon. But I'm really proud of it and the work we've done on this.
Yeah, and you talked earlier on about the improvement in the way that greenkeepers are perceived in the wider golfing public. And I can attest to that. I've been working in the golf industry for 10 years. And while things are not perfect, they have made considerable strides in the last 10 years. And the way, you know, when I sit in the golf club, the way I hear golf club members talk about turf professionals and greenkeepers, and Thank a Greenkeeper Day is part of that. It's, you know, it's a small part of the reason why those attitudes are changing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have days. I mean, you can go on that calendar, can't you, and see what every day is National, you know, 12 Things yeah. Day. But it gives us just a focus. It gives us a chance every year to just go. And particularly this time of year when golfers have hopefully enjoyed their summer of golf and they're looking forward to the final competitions of the year, you and I would have a view that we should be a bit further away from the final competition of the year because the season should run May to October, not April, September, but that's a separate conversation. You know, this is a good time of year for us to be reflecting because most people have enjoyed a great summer, you know, playing golf on incredibly conditioned golf courses. We've seen some wonderful conditions, you know, on TV as well. I've had the privilege to attend a few events this year, and it's, you know, and I've played a few golf courses this year, and they've all been magnificent. So it's been great fun.
Yeah, that's one day in the diary that everyone needs to pay attention to. Another is Grounds Fest the following week. Obviously a two-day show that combines an indoor exhibition with outdoor demonstrations, which allows greenkeepers to see machinery in action and try equipment for themselves. Obviously, Bigger has a partnership with Groundfest, and you're going to be hosting a series of educational seminars again across both days. Just tell me a little bit about what the association is going to be doing at Groundsfest.
Yeah, first of all, I think it's important to mention September is just a mad month for Bigger and greenkeeping. We've got loads of launches, loads of stuff going on, and it's that kind of final official month of the golf season before we kind of head straight into our big season for us as a Bigger, which is winter and planning towards BTME, etc. Groundsfest is a fabulous event. It's very akin to the event we ran in the year after COVID when we ran what we called the Festival of Turf. Which was our attempt to try and see if there was a market for a predominantly outdoor event still in the season, to see if our members would come together and also the wider sort of turf industry. We were a little bit unlucky with timing back in 2021. We thought COVID would be over, and it wasn't. The event was a great success operationally, not a great success in terms of the number of people who came, but it certainly gave our friends at Fusion Media, who are the brains behind Groundsfest, a little bit of, they were thinking about something very similar at the time, and they're now, I think this must be the fourth this year of the Groundsfests. And it's a really cool event. You know, our members and also guys from all over the turf industry just love coming together. And we need to do that more and more. I mean, if there's one legacy of the COVID period in this country, and actually not just in this country but globally, it's that desire to do human things together. I mean, if you look at things like festivals and concert tickets and I mean, even, you know, theatres and things, which are all booming because people want that kind of, that live experience. Conferences are going very, very well. We all thought these things would all be entirely on Zoom now, but no, actually, in-person events are growing and thriving, as is our own BTME. But doing so outdoors and kind of actually kicking the tires and looking at the machinery and the different products on show is hugely popular. The event was conceived predominantly more towards the landscaping and sports turf side rather than our side, but we see some real value in an opportunity for our members to come together at that same time. September's not a bad time for that. So we partnered with them. We put a series of seminars on all manner of topics across the 2 days. The usual stuff from the usual kind of, you know, experts in the industry. They're all free. You know, our members can come along. In fact, anybody can come along if they're interested and have a look, but also get that chance to just network with peers. There's hundreds of different exhibitors across everything you would imagine that is involved in caring for outdoor spaces. I walk around, you know, really quite interested because it's not golf specific. So there's equipment for all manner of other worlds, which I find fascinating. And it's also a really good chance for our industry to kind of, we don't come together often enough. I mean, BTME is brilliant. You know, it is the big time of year, but to get this chance kind of 4 months in advance of that, 4 or 5 months, just to kind of come together is brilliant. I hope I see a lot of members there. I know a lot of guys, particularly if we've had this a decent spell of rain now, are going to be involved in their work, but it does come pre sort of winter project time. So it's a good time for greenkeepers.
Yeah, and any opportunity to get involved in some education. And obviously, you know, that's what BTME is primarily known for. I think amongst those of us who work in the industry, you know, the CPD opportunities that are there and the seminar opportunities. If members can get involved and can get the time to go and attend some of those sessions, it's really worth doing.
Absolutely.
We've got a lot of initiatives to get through. You've been busy this year. The big initiative, I think, before we start getting into things like Kickstart and the PLP and obviously FTMI and so on, I think one of the big initiatives this year has been extra benefits, which obviously came out of the 2024 survey, which showed that 70% of members thought that Bigger should offer some access to healthcare. And you've done that. And that's launched. Obviously, now obviously members have the option to upgrade to Bigger Extra Benefits, complete well-being bundle, it's easy for me to say, which includes Bupa Well Plus as part of their Bigger membership. And as someone who's looking from the outside, I thought that was a tremendous thing to do, essentially to offer a kind of private healthcare option for your members. I mean, that's taken a lot of work to do. And, you know, some members of your team have spent a number of hours trying to make this happen. And it's really something that members should consider upgrading to, isn't it? I think it's £75 for the year, I think. And obviously, if they get the complete well-being bundle, they get 5 premium health subscriptions that are worth over £320. I think, you know, the chance to get some private healthcare options for £75 a year, I mean, all credit's Bigger, really.
Yeah, really pleased with this. I've been kind of sort of semi-following over this last 2 or 3 years a mantra. There was a management book many years ago called Good to Great. And the idea with it is, and this it has a real sporting sort of analogy, that, you know, you and I know some good golfers, right? You work with a number of good golfers. Neither you nor I, sadly, are good golfers, but we know some good golfers. But there is a difference between them and great golfers. And great golfers were good once, and then they did something different to get great. There is something very different between great and good. I fell 3 or 4 years ago, post-COVID, post all the kind of upheaval of COVID, that we'd found ourselves into a position where we were a pretty good organization. We had a good membership base. We were offering some nice initiatives, and we're doing a pretty decent job for our members. But I know our members want more. I've got a very ambitious board who want us to really kind of reach for the stars. And I do this myself. Been here a long time now, but it feels like this is the kind of my second go at it after COVID. It feels like a whole new business. And I really challenged the team and said, what can we do differently? How do we think completely differently to make Bigger and therefore our impact on greenkeepers great? And my colleague, Scott Reeves, who's our membership director, said he really wanted to go and ask everybody's opinion. And he kept using the phrase kind of warts and all. You know, so we commissioned a survey this time 2 years ago. Survey took place in sort of November. We're repeating it in just a couple of months' time. We're going to ask a lot of the same questions to see whether actually our perception of progress is actually seen by our constituent audience. But we asked a load of questions about what people thought of Bigger, what they thought of the things we did do, and what they thought that we should do or we should consider doing. There were two things particularly that came through as things they'd love to see us do, along with things like get them more pay and all the sort of things. And the two things were some kind of workforce representation. So we already offer free legal support and free legal help for any members' legal issues. And we also offer an HR advice line to all of our members, you know, within the membership package. But there are times when our members are in a major kind of workforce dispute, sometimes with absolutely no fault of their own, and they feel like they're being kind of steamrolled by a large organization. So, you know, they turn to us for help. We haven't cracked that. We're very close to potentially cracking that, but we do feel there's a chance where we want somebody, because Bigger is not a union. We don't want to be a union. But if you're in a union, then in those circumstances, somebody kind of walks into those meetings with you who's a union representative. And we want to find a way of somehow offering that kind of solution so that a greenkeeper doesn't feel alone. In the specific way that they work, the usual rule is that you can take a colleague or a union rep into these meetings with you. And a greenkeeper doesn't really want to be sitting with one of his colleagues, you know, particularly if it's a head greenkeeper, course manager, having one of their, you know, team who look up to them sitting there hearing warts and all can be pretty difficult. So that one we're still working on. We're 2 years in, but we're really, really trying to make that work. Healthcare came through massively. You know, it just, I mean, we all know how hard it can be to get a GP's appointment and all of this sort of stuff. And we've worked with an Emma Benefits company for many years now, 12, 13 years or so. We believe strongly that if a member actually activates that part of the membership, which is free, they will save more than the cost of the membership in an annual year. I mean, just really simple things like airport parking and car hire and discounts at supermarkets and things like this. There's enough there. I've got members of my team take benefit of this and say they save hundreds of pounds a year. So it's a no-brainer on that front. But this opportunity to roll something healthcare into it so that our members are effectively being treated by Bupa and Bupa Wellness Plus as part of a really large cohort, because their membership benefit provider can aggregate those in with other member organizations they use to give us this brilliant price. So you and I can't go and get this price off the street, but if you join bigger, you can. So, and you know, it's a cliche, if you haven't got your health, what have you got? I firmly believe that if I was running a golf club, I would want particularly my course manager to be on private health. I think as a club manager or club owner, I would pay for that, because if that person's off long-term sick, ill or injured, I've got a real problem in my business. So I'm seeing that. I'm seeing clubs add this into benefit packages now in terms of this way of trying to want to really make their course manager and other greenkeeping team feel valued. But I think that ability to have active healthcare is really important.
Yeah, Bupa World Plus offers access to a digital GP from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekdays, mental health and MSK triage support, as well as online fitness classes and health tools. It really is. It really is a fantastic thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and you don't have to do it, but if you want to take it up, it's incredibly good value, and all of a sudden there's peace of mind, you know, which is really important. The really key thing is that we genuinely went to our members and indeed greenkeepers who aren't members and said, what do you think? They've responded. We couldn't do things like that. You know, it took some time. We've researched, but we've come back and, you know, it's a cliche, but you said, we listened, we heard, and we have now responded with the healthcare option and with some of the other things that we're going to come on to talk about, which our members thought were important to them. And a key thing from that was as well that we wanted to know what our constituents thought of us. And I have to say, we had a net promoter score. I won't go into details of it, but it was a very positive net promoter score. So in general, our members actually think bigger is okay. That isn't true of every membership association. Some membership associations, the members can sometimes begrudge the fact that they have to pay their subscription, be part of it. We were really pleased with that response. The question is, 2 years on, when I repeat that question, am I going to see that go up or down? And I hope it's just going to sneak up a little bit and say that we're on the right path.
If you're enjoying this episode and would like to put your organisation in front of our audience, then we'd love to hear from you. Podcast sponsorship is a great way to support the work we do while reaching an engaged community of greenkeeping professionals as well as the wider turf industry. To find out more about sponsorship opportunities, please contact our team by email on sales@bigger.co.uk.
You're always more to do, I suppose. If members open up their latest edition of Greenkeeper International, see an advert in there and a QR code for the Professional Leadership Programme. There are 24 learners are enrolled annually. It's designed for aspiring leaders, head greenkeepers and course managers. So just tell us a little bit. I called it the PLP earlier on. I'll call it the Professional Leadership Programme from now on. Just tell us a little bit about it, Jim, if you could.
Yeah, it actually ties in with something else that's important this month. So this month begins the Future Turf Managers Initiative, sponsored and supported by our friends at Jacobson. And every year that's 15 or 20 aspiring turf managers, people in a deputy role or lower who want to make that leap in the future to being a course manager, being a superintendent, being a head greenkeeper. And it's a wonderful thing that Jacobson supported now since 2013. So a really great initiative for us. But it's a finite number. And every year we get hundreds of applications for this program, and only 15 or 20 get to go through it. And then people opportunity to take advantage of that is gone because they move into a head greenkeeper role or whatever it may be. When I first started in Bigger, all those, thank you for reminding me, 15 plus years ago, there was a level 4 qualification that was really popular in the market, which was teaching people management skills. You've learned your agronomy, you've learned your greenkeeping, but what do you need to know to be a manager? And it was a good course, and it was heavily subsidized by the government. And that funding was withdrawn. I don't criticize that decision. The decision on what to fund is a really difficult one for the government. And currently they support our level 2, level 3, and level 5 apprenticeships brilliantly across England. There's great funding in Scotland as well. So I have no criticism of that. But there's been a gap in the market for that leap from a practitioner to a manager for 10 plus years. And it's something we've wanted to fill. FTMI has filled that for something like 200 and odd people, and the list of names who've gone through that into successful course manager roles shows it's a great initiative. This course, put together by my colleague Rob Phillips, our education director, working closely with some key people, including St Andrews Management Centre, which is enabling us to have a link with the Chartered Managers Institute. So if you take the PLP, you come out with a foundation chartered manager qualification, which means that you've got some you know, medals on your jacket. You are sitting in a meeting with your employers, and you are qualified as a manager as well as qualified as a greenkeeper, which is really important. But I once heard one of our fantastic young course managers, James Parker, who's up in the islands of Scotland at Macrahanish Dunes, and he explained that the biggest leap in greenkeeping is the leap from in the ranks of greenkeepers to course manager. It's the biggest leap. And he described FTMI as narrowing that gap. There's still a jump, but it makes that jump that bit easier. We believe the PLP, covering all the various issues you need to understand to be a manager and to be a manager of a golf course, is going to narrow that gap significantly. So we know we had a huge amount of interest in it when it was soft launched at BTME. Our first cohort will go live this month. And we're really excited about it. And again, it was something that came through our survey that this is something our members want. They want the ability to educate, to become more hireable and more experienced and more kind of qualified in those roles.
While we're talking about bigger initiatives, can you just give us an update on the Kickstart program as well, which is obviously part of your formal education pathway?
Yeah, the Kickstart is an absolute, you know, greenkeeping 101. It's what does a greenkeeper do from the very, very basics. It's designed for people that know essentially nothing about it to come in. It's an online course. You can take up to 6 months to do it, but we've had people complete it in a week. I can see this course being something that we do face-to-face in future in certain learning sites around the country. I can see it being something that clubs utilize, for example, seasonal staff. We've talked to some of the really big facilities across the UK who have a new cohort of seasonal staff. In fact, we've talked to facilities outside the UK as well who do this every year. They take on new people. They want to give them the very basics before they even start. So it's the absolute basics. I believe one of your colleagues who is very influential on this podcast and magazine, Russ, is going to do it himself. He's got quite a bit on his plate these days with a newborn and everything else. But yeah, he's vowed to take the qualification himself. And it's just in the education structure, in the English structure, it's kind of a level 1 qualification. It's the very basics. But it launched back in the spring. We effectively launched a BTME. We've had our first graduates, and it's proven very popular. Yeah, really pleased with it.
Well, maybe I should join him.
You should. You should.
Well, if you work in the golf industry and you work around greenkeepers, then perhaps it's always helpful, isn't it, to understand the day in the life of what your members are going through. You did say September was a very busy month. And as we record this again, I think the finalists of Student Greenkeeper of the Year are going to be convening at Rockcliffe Hall for their final challenges. I mean, it's the 37th year now of Student Greenkeeper of the Year. It's got an incredible roll of honour when you look at some of the names that are on it. I mean, it really has sort of laid the foundations for some amazing careers in greenkeeping. Why does this award scheme, why does this scheme continue to be so important, both to you at Bigger and obviously to Toro as well?
Joe, I was having a conversation just this week with some very ambitious, quite senior greenkeepers and some people outside our industry. And we were concluding that the thing that that kind of is present in all the people that are really successful is that kind of constant strive to be better, always wanting to do more. In our industry, that often presents itself by doing more and more qualifications, you know, and often leading to the master greenkeeper in our organization as being the very top kind of, and the, probably the widest, the highest regarded award in greenkeeping globally. And what Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year does is identifies those people early, because it's open to apprentices and students who are doing their level two or level three. So they're often pretty early in their career. And it's a pretty straightforward process to get involved with. You get interviewed, you come to the final. There's usually 6 to 8 finalists in each category. But those people, and it's genuinely one of my favorite sort of couple of days of the year, spending time around these people that you know are passionate about getting better, demonstrating how good they are, wanting to learn more, and wanting to go, look at me. I want to be successful in this industry. Every year, I mean, it's become a bigger cliche, but you know, our president or our chairman will write in the magazine the following month, you know, I'm feel confident that our industry is in safe hands, because they've met a dozen young greenkeepers, usually young, who are beginning on their journey, and they've got so much passion and knowledge. And I think that's a great thing. It's the opportunity for people to sort of shine. When my kids started primary school, I remember having a conversation with the head teacher, who was an amazing man at the tiny primary school my kids went to. And he said, we like to give our children the opportunity to be brave. And that really inspired me, this idea, whether that's on the sports field, whether that's performing, whether that's learning music, whatever it may be, that was my kids' school's ethos. And I think that we stand for the same thing. We like to give our members the opportunity to be brave, to actually demonstrate their skills and their knowledge, and to, if they can, to show the world and show their colleagues and show their peers that they have something special. And as you say, the role of honor is pretty impressive. If you were to take the list of the 37 or 36 winners to date and the two or three runners up from each year, you would see a bit of a who's who. There's been some incredible seconds and thirds in that time as well, who've gone on to incredible careers.
Yeah, and obviously it helps to showcase greenkeeping as a career, as does the work that First Green has been doing. I obviously spoke to Jenny Bledge on one of our previous podcasts, and it is incredible to see how that is infusing young people to perhaps take the first steps into a career in greenkeeping, but also the work that you're doing with second careers, you know, and trying, you know, people who are looking to find a new path, and encouraging them into greenkeeping as well.
Yeah, I feel like I've mentioned COVID too often for a 2026 podcast, and it's been done-ish for a number of years. But another kind of hangover of COVID was people really assessing what they wanted from their work-life balance. And I think it put, and I think this is a good thing, I think it put a lot more power in the hand of the employee. I think the employee started to realize that they're pretty valuable, whereas, you know, I was brought up to believe that you were lucky to have a job, you know, and you were just grateful, and whatever your bosses asked you to do, you did. We definitely saw that affect greenkeeper numbers. A number of people remember, hang on a minute, do I want this particular career? Do I want 5 a.m. starts? Do I want weekend work on occasion? Do I want the stress of dealing with the weather or with golfers? And so we certainly saw a drop off in numbers from that respect. But we also saw the beginnings of an influx of people coming into greenkeeping, because frankly, they looked at what the work their greenkeepers had done throughout, particularly throughout the lockdowns. And they were sat staring at a screen, as I'm doing now with you, and thinking, I'd love to be sitting out there doing that, or out there with those people doing that job. So we have seen people coming into our career, into our profession, second careers, and from all manner of jobs. You know, you know, we've got a finalist in Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year that was in law, you know, was qualifying as a solicitor and is now trying to win Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year. And, you know, I would say this, wouldn't I, but it's an amazing profession, and there's incredible opportunities to travel the world, to get involved in, if you love golf, to get involved in incredible golf things. If you love nature, to be responsible for 100 to 150 acres of prime biodiverse habitats. All of these things are there in our profession. So we've just got to find really easy ways for people to begin their career. The Kickstart program is one of those. It's the challenge that's faced the game of golf for years, and who'd have known it, but suddenly a global pandemic was the thing that suddenly got 2 million people off their bums and out onto golf courses. But we've always tried to say, is there a way of making entry to golf easy? Because golf is quite a difficult game to start. And we're trying to find ways of making entry to greenkeeping easy. If someone has this, that spark in their head, could I try this? Then First Green is brilliant for young people. The work we're doing with some of the armed forces now to try and create retraining opportunities for forces leavers, and to have pathways in through things like the Kickstart program for others is hopefully going to make those steps easier. It's been done well in golf club management. The CMAE and the GCMA have both run courses where you could be doing your job now, Steve, and think, I'd quite fancy that as a second career choice. I'll go and do some of these introductory courses, you know, in my own time, so that when the time comes, I'd feel qualified for a role. So we're trying to make sure that's an easy option for people.
You're always trying to stress the positives of a career in greenkeeping. And you know, noticeably, we saw the reaction to a former cabinet minister's comments on greenkeeping as a career earlier this year. But what I think I was most pleased about with that was the reaction, the strong positive reaction to those comments from people who were saying, look, this is a really rewarding career. And for you, you know, if we look back sort of 2 or 3 years, or maybe a bit further, there were some surveys that actually you produced as an association that had some pretty bleak things in it about how greenkeepers perceived whether they were going to stay in the industry or not. To see these transformations, to see what we're seeing with First Green, to see the positive reception that a career in the industry is getting must be very pleasing for you.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, on Mrs. Braverman, she was pressed by an interviewer to name what were these dud degrees. And for some reason, the first words out of her mouth were a degree in golf course management. There are very few people in the UK with a degree in golf course management. Every single one of them is unbelievably hireable. They're in great jobs. If you have a degree, you're going to be at the top of the tree in a profession that may not lead you to be prime minister, but is a very, very good profession. So it was an own goal of pretty substantial caliber when she said that. The weird thing is just recently, as last week, she's managed to reiterate this for some reason or other, despite the fact that she'd been written to and explained to her why this is the wrong target. We do have a problem in this country. We have a problem with the number of graduates out of work. You know, I've got 2 kids at university age, and it's a concern for us. You know, are they doing a degree which is going to make them employable? Believe me, if you choose a route, a profession in greenkeeping, you are unbelievably employable. So she's just completely wrong on that front. But you're right, to go back to that survey, the 2022 survey we did, which we kind of slightly naughtily launched during St Andrew's Open Week to try and get maximum attention, there were some bleak figures in there. And it definitely got people's attention. And actually, within weeks of that, the golf industry came together and launched a Careers in Golf project. Really grateful to some key colleagues in that. The European Tour, DP World Tour, were very strong in wanting to be part of this, the British Golf Industry Association as well. And some really, really good work's been done on that. First Green, we'd already begun that project, but other things have happened. I'm pleased to say that survey is repeated every 2 years. So we've done 22, 24, 26. And each year we've seen improvements in those numbers. It's not perfect, but the number of people that are happy in their role or moderately satisfied or completely satisfied has gone up as a percentage each time around, which is really good to hear. We've not fixed it. It's not complete. We're still running Thank a Greenkeeper. We're still lobbying at the gates of anybody to try and make sure that greenkeepers are better treated and respected. But we are definitely making progress.
I mean, you've noted the surveys a number of times now, and obviously we've got the 2026 survey. How important is it for members to respond to that survey? And what, I mean, you are showing that you're acting on the things that they are telling you. So how does it help you better understand the needs of the membership as well?
Well, it's total, isn't it? You're a journalist, right? And you need to find topics that are of interest to your audience. You could write the most beautifully written, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning article about the world handicap system or whatever it may be, but if no one wants to read it, it's not a great deal of use to anybody. And there are times when we've done this as an association. We've created something that we think is, I mentioned before, it's the wrong example in some respect, but we did a really good job of putting on the Festival of Turf, but nobody came. So therefore, it's a failure. You know, I couldn't fault the work and ethic of anybody as part of doing this. It's 5 years ago now, and I'm slight just about over it. But you know, it didn't work. So you have to rethink. And the only way we can have any real insight, we've got a pretty good idea what some of our members want, but we need to hear from them to understand exactly what's happening. We've got a great network. We've got regional members of our team that live and work in our regions. We've got a good number of volunteer committee members who will help us tell us what's going on the ground. Greenkeeping in Kent this year is very different to greenkeeping in the Cairngorms. You know, with a difference in climate, we can't just make assumptions sitting here as I am today in North Yorkshire. We've got to have that information, that feedback. And so the surveys that we do, we're kind of regularly now at around two decent surveys a year or three in 2 years. We run the workforce and facilities survey every 2 years. We're going to run our survey about bigger and about our services and what our members want from us. We're running it again this year, and then we'll commit to doing that annually so that we can see trends, we can see developments, and we can also see where we're getting it wrong, because we won't get everything right. You know, we do everything with the best of intentions, but if it's not working, let's stop and start again with something better.
Yeah, I'd like to finish, if I could, by talking about BTME, because it's going to be soon. It doesn't feel like 2 minutes since the last one, but here we are in September, and it's really not very far away. I mean, we've talked in the past about how important BTME is, not just to Bigger, but obviously to Harrogate as well, and the huge amount of money that it brings in to that local community there. We've got some new awards, haven't we, for the Bigger Awards in 2027. Greenkeeping Team of the Year, I think, and Volunteer of the Year, for which applications are going to open, I think, pretty soon. Tell us a little bit about why you've expanded the Bigger Awards and the kind of applications you're hoping to receive.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, if we're going to mention BTME, I need to say to the people this podcast, please check the dates in your calendars, because for a variety of logistical reasons, BTME is a week later this year. It's right at the end of January rather than being in that kind of usual third full week of January. So it's in the fourth full week of January, which is a slight difference. If you book the hotel for the wrong week, that's going to be a major faux pas. The American show, which doesn't have a huge impact on ours in terms of numbers of visitors, but it does in terms of the exhibitors who take part, is taking place in our normal week. So we've moved back a week. So please check your dates for that. The award ceremony, the bigger celebration, as we refer to it, our celebration of 12 months of greenkeeping, has evolved loads over the years. We're just trying to find the absolute right categories that recognize what it is that we think is important in greenkeeping. We've had a good run with Project of the Year and with Championship Performance of the Year. I don't think Championship Performance is dead. We're not running it this year per se, but I would anticipate that some of the nominations for Team of the Year will hinge around a team that has done great things around a championship. But we wanted to find a way that what we really wanted to be able to do is recognize any greenkeeping team that has just done incredible work, has defied the odds, has done something special in a year. And we felt that the two categories were a little too narrow around project. What is a project? Some projects last 10 years, some last 10 minutes. And championship tended to sort of focus towards the larger clubs, albeit we've had a couple of pretty small clubs win it over the years with incredible performances. So just reshaping that Team of the Year to go, come on, loads of our members will be hugely proud of the work they've done. Loads of people within golf clubs that are our members will be hugely proud of the work that their team has done in difficult circumstances. I'm expecting there'll be some nominations around dealing with drought and water scarcity. And then the other award, which we think is really important, we're going to continue with our sort of Lifetime Achievement Outstanding Contribution Award. It's always nice to honour somebody that's given usually a huge lifetime career to the profession. But there are people in our profession who just do so much for it themselves for no recompense. And that can be on committees, it can be locally with wildlife organizations, it can be with kids, it can be all sorts of things. And so we feel there's a really good chance to recognize a lot of people, and they'll all be, every single person that gets nominated in this category will be embarrassed by it and will say, I only do this because it's the right thing to do. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't kind of shout them from the rooftop. So I'm excited about the sort of people that are going to come forward for that category. We've got a pretty good internal nomination process for that through our own volunteer network, funny enough, who I think will help us put together a great shortlist for that.
Yeah, it feels like it's just bringing the whole community together a bit more as well.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I've said it a number of times, I'll say it again. I believe we're the most people-focused organization in golf. I want us to be that. I want us to be an association that focuses on our people, our members, and for that matter, our team of staff, who are all wonderful people as well. I think we're more people focused. That's not meant as a negative to any other organization. I think we have to be about the people, and we're just trying to make sure we find those categories that represent that the best. And also that are essentially kind of open to all. Otherwise, BTME is shaping up extremely well. We've had a couple of challenges in terms of some of the space that's available this year, because they're doing some development work at the Harrogate Convention Centre. So we've got yet another sort of twist and turn in the way that we use the halls in Harrogate, which will mean some people get lost again, as we always hope they do, and they can't find their way out. The education programme is basically complete. It's going to print pretty much this week. So really excited by that. We've got some fantastic topics, speakers coming from around the world and around the UK, and some new kind of things that we're doing within the program. I won't kind of steal the thunder from my colleagues who put that together. That'll all stuff will come out in the next couple of weeks for the membership to see. But I think it'll be just as, if not more popular than we've had in the past. We were really up on numbers last year in terms of visitors and conference and education delegates. So I hope that trend continues. As I say, people seem just so keen to get together and share time and break bread. I'm still waiting for the medal from Harrogate for being for providing such a boost to their economy every year in what would otherwise be a quiet week. But we don't do it for that. But yeah, you're right. We're a very big contributor to the hospitality economy of Harrogate. We know that the hotel prices go up for that week because it's popular. We know that they're all full. We know that there's a number of bars and restaurants that have their best week of the year. But we also know that we have a great time. So, it's a win-win, I think, all round for that event.
Yeah, I look forward to spending quite a lot of time looking at a map. Trying to find out where to go at the end of January this year. Book your spaces for BTME if you haven't already. It comes around very quickly. Before you know it, we'll be there. Just part of one of the many bigger initiatives that have really been accelerating over the past 12 months. And I'm sure we'll see plenty more, Jim, in 2027, for which we will look forward to speaking again. But for now, thanks for joining us on the Bigger Podcast.
Thanks, Steve. Always good to speak to you.